How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Lakers. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am experiencing throat difficulties again, if it might shock you, although I hope I sound better than I did earlier on in the week. If you want to find me sounding like I have a frog stuck in my throat, you can find those shows on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. And again, we keep getting told that you know, the show, that people are enjoying the shows, which we love. We really appreciate that. And then we've been told a couple times that people have been using the promo code LO Lakers on SeatGeek. We greatly appreciate that. We're trying to hand out money to people. I'm literally
Lakers season is back, guys. Just get your tickets now, right, while you still have this promo code to use.
Absolutely. So yeah, use the promo code LO Lakers on SeatGeek. Again, SeatGeek's way better than StubHub. It's just not even close. So use that app and then take the $20 that we're trying to give you. I was walking around the other day. I was walking around a mall just with $20 bills in my hands, just trying to hand them to people.
Okay, now this is just false out. Locked On Lakers does not endorse anything Anthony just said or anything he tweets about Harrison Barnes and Brandon Ingram.
Well, yeah, you were the one with the way worse tweet today.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so today's show, just like the Lakers training camp thus far, is going to be defense-centric, right? The message that Luke is trying to send is that they're trying to focus completely on defense. They are paying attention to detail. They are doing whatever they possibly can to get better on that end. And quite bluntly, Harrison asked, do we think they actually can? Right? And that's a lot more complicated question.
Yeah, I think it's great that they've devoted anywhere from 80 to 90%. I did think that it was funny that yesterday Luke estimated about 80% of the Lakers practice was focused on defense. And so we kind of talked about that a little bit yesterday. And then I saw today I think it was either Mike Trudell or Joey Ramirez's roundup from Lakers practice today. I read both of them. I forget which one had this note, but they noted that 90% of the Lakers practices so far had been focused on defense. So does that mean that they went, you know, maybe I'm just getting stuck on the math here, but does that mean that they went 100% on defense today just to get that average? I don't know, because then Luke was talking about they were running through sets. There's some math off here. Something's not calculating.
The Lakers analytics department remains behind.
That was a low blow, man. That was a messed up shot. By all accounts, they've beefed it up a little bit, but. and hey, they have a new coach that likes analytics and doesn't probably just like throw those reports directly in the paper shredder or something.
Could you just imagine the last guy when he got those analytics things that he'd like hit, you know, they'd hand it to him and he would just immediately in one motion just drop it into a shredder?
Or like use them to like throw at D'Angelo Russell, because they're like fold them up and just chuck them at him like they were a newspaper.
Rook, get in here. I got to throw something at your face. Bang.
Anyway,
all right.
So can the Lakers be better on defense last year? So we ran through the statistics a couple shows ago, but I'll just rehash this again. the Lakers were really bad on defense last year. I think it's fair to say they gave up. They were the worst. They were the least. I'm tired of hearing people use points per possession as a measure of their of how bad their defense was. That does not give them nearly enough credit for how amazingly bad they were. I think I saw they were 26th in points per in points, like just total points given up or whatever, which like that would paint them as, hey, they were almost out of the bottom five, right? No, that is affected by pace, and you can't, that's just not a reliable measure of defense. It's just more off than if you're measuring it on a per 100 possession basis, because that standardizes it out for pace. And so per 100 possessions, the Lakers were giving out, or giving up, I guess giving out is also accurate, but they were giving up 109.3 points per 100 possessions, which again is basically just turning every, the Golden State Warriors, so the Oklahoma City Thunder had the second best offense in the league. They scored 109.9 points per 100 possessions. So I erred. That was an error on my part. We're printing a retraction. The Lakers did not turn every team into the Golden State Warriors last year. They just turned every team into the Oklahoma City Thunder. So,
gosh,
I guess,
how did
way
we
to
err
go,
so
guys.
Badly?
I don't, that's not really meant. The next closest team was the Brooklyn Nets, who gave up 108.5. So almost a full point per 100 possessions less.
And here we thought that one guy was a defensive coach, right?
He was certainly defensive-minded. I think he thought about defense a lot. I think he told his players to play defense a lot. I don't know that he really gave them a plan to play defense a whole lot. So other than man up, which, hey, like that's a solid plan when you have really good defenders. The Lakers unfortunately didn't. And that kind of brings us into the quotes that were coming out of practice today, where a lot of the guys, they were kind of focused on, they were talking about, you know, the Lakers are just getting into, as Serena Winters pointed out on Twitter, the Lakers are just getting into more fundamentals than they were last year. The guys are talking about, to quote from her, they're talking about closeouts, bumping, tagging cutters, trapping, rotations, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the types of things that, I mean, none of those were manning up. And so I think that that's encouraging that the Lakers are working on other defensive fundamentals other than being men. So, you know, they mastered the part of being a man last year, I guess. I think they had that before they entered the league, but I don't know. I mean, we don't want to give the, you know, rookies too much credit. So they got that down. Now they're actually going to work on things that might help them on defense.
I mean, are we sure that women can't just be really good defenders too?
That's true, actually. The WNBA. So, hey, I mean, even that, I guess, yeah.
All right. So here's how we're going to handle this conversation. We'll get to the shortcomings that we saw a little bit more systemically at the end of the show when we talk a little bit more about what Luke might have to offer on that end. We're going to start the conversation. We're going to talk about, you know, the perimeter guys, the guards mostly, and then we're going to talk about the wings, and then we'll talk about the bigs and how the, you know, in each of those stages, the Lakers might be able to improve from what they were last year. So I really think that from the guard spots, the starting guard spots, D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson, that the Lakers can make noticeable strides this year defensively, because Russell is now going to be a sophomore, and that's going to help. And unless Jordan Clarkson has the worst, you know, is the worst person when it comes to noticing bad habits and then implementing the good ones that has ever existed.
It doesn't seem like he does based on what he said from, or it doesn't seem like he is based on what he said from training camp and media day and pretty much every interview throughout the offseason so far.
So with both of those things being, we would hope, at least somewhat true, just inherently the Lakers are going to be better this year defensively than they were last year.
From those backcourt spots.
Yeah, at those two spots.
You gave great reasons for that, and the other reason I would add is because it would be hard to be worse.
That's also true. That's also very true.
Although their backup backcourt may give them may actually prove that wrong. Maybe it won't be that hard to be worse.
Before we get to the bench guys, because those guys aren't going to be good no matter what. There's nothing that those guys are going
to
be.
We'll get to them in a second.
But in terms of, I guess from the guard spots, what I would be hoping to see is in technique. Jordan Clarkson and D'Angelo Russell are going to play two very different styles of defense, where when I think of D'Angelo Russell's defense, especially because he's going to be guarding opposing point guards, I would, if I was coaching him, tell him, hey, take maybe a fraction of a step back and utilize your length to keep guards in front of him, right? Because he isn't the athlete that Jordan Clarkson is. And conversely, I would say with Jordan Clarkson, I would be a little bit more willing to say, hey, go out and get after it. And the other reason I would say I'd be more willing to let Clarkson free to hand check a little bit more and just be a lot more aggressive defensively is because he has Lou Williams, who is at least an NBA average backup shooting guard, right?
Offensively.
I would just say in general, I think a lot of teams would welcome Lou Williams as their backup shooting guard.
Offensively.
Okay. whereas I don't think very many teams would be thrilled with Marcelo Huertas and Jose Calderon as their backup point guards on either side of the ball. Right.
Yeah, there's some teams. Yeah, they're okay, but yeah, I mostly agree.
So with Russell, I think it's more important that he stays on the court and stays out of foul trouble. It's more important that Russell not do that than it is for Jordan Clarkson, who you can kind of say, "Hey, go out, get after it, see how that goes."
Yeah,
and it actually suits both of their playing styles better to do so. Technique-wise, from what you saw, and it was only summer league, but we were able to see D'Angelo Russell on the court defensively with some of what Luke is hoping to bring to the table defensively. What was your takeaway from what you saw from him? Because I was actually, I wouldn't say impressed. I wasn't overall impressed, but I did see some good things.
Yeah, I think he's very – this is a stereotype about a lot of guys, but it's very true when it comes to young players, and I think it's very true when it comes to D'Angelo Russell, is that they're a lot more engaged when their guy has the ball mm-hmm. or when they're in an active, normal, on-ball defense situation. It's the little kind of – it's the little things that they mess up. Mm-hmm. It's letting their guy back cut them. It's letting their guy dribble the entire length of the floor.
Overhelping.
And almost, huh?
Overhelping. I'm just naming other tendencies off.
Well, I was referencing the TJ McConnell layup that Russell ended up having to bail the team out of because he was busy celebrating and TJ McConnell just took the ball the length of the floor and scored. And then Russell, you know, he hit the shot. He screamed about the ice in his veins. And that was probably the coolest moment of summer league. And so but it was set up because he kind of screwed up defensively a little bit.
Yeah.
And so it's very mixed. I think it's like he has the tools to be an acceptable NBA defender. I think he just has to set his mind to it. And I think that that's the type of thing that will come with age and experience is kind of the hope there.
Yeah, I would say for Russell, if I was coaching Russell, the thing I would tell him is I don't need you to lock anybody down by any stretch because right now you're not going to be able to do that. And the tendency when you tell a young kid, hey, I need you to go out and lock somebody down, is that they're going to overwork themselves. And when you're somebody like Russell who is going to be asked to do a lot offensively, I don't want him to overwork himself defensively, right? That's where I would imagine Jordan Clarkson is going to spend more time on opposing point guards or the better backcourt player than Russell will this year. And that's going to be a trend, I would say, throughout the season.
Yeah, and I think Clarkson has, I wouldn't necessarily say better defensive instincts because I would say, in my opinion, Russell was the more consistent defender last year. Now, that's not saying much because Clarkson was so bad and he was playing, he wasn't used to defending shooting guards. And so he had those kind of things working against him. But Clarkson is more athletic, and you would think that he would be a guy that's gonna be able to utilize his tools and be a plus defender at some point if he could kind of use correct techniques and do some of the things that we talked about during our shooting guard preview last week, just using better footwork and not kind of overplaying guys and things like, and just paying attention off the ball, things like that.
Mm-hmm. I would say it's more important for Clarkson to become at least an average defender than it is for him to do anything offensively if the Lakers are hoping that Russell and Clarkson can be backcourt mates for the foreseeable future. Because Russell is talented enough offensively to make up for whatever Clarkson might not be able to produce on that end. And I would say so is Ingram to a certain extent. But if Clarkson can't become, you know, a decent defender even, then he's a combo guard and he becomes a sixth man.
And all signs are kind of pointing to him being able to do that. I mean, again, it's just preseason, so we get caught up in kind of the positivity wave. Mm-hmm. But Luke Walton, you know, he pretty effusively praised Jordan Clarkson's defense over the last couple of days out of training camp. And he even talked about that he thought Clarkson was one of the team's better defenders. I'm having trouble. Yeah, so Walton, during that time... during the first 2 days of training camp, Walton has called Clarkson, quote, one of our best defenders.
Yeah, that's great to hear.
And now, so, yeah, it's just it's interesting. And he talked about how Clarkson talked about how to Mark Medina of the LA Daily News. Clarkson talked about he's just been on, talking about Walton. He's just been on me and helping me build confidence in myself, Clarkson said. He's teaching me and staying on me about everything defensively. And so it seems like this, if Clarkson's going to become a good defender, this is the right situation.
Right. Absolutely. And I would just say in general, and we talked about this last night when we got into the 50 Shades of Shade kind of stuff, is that with any coaching change, you're going to see a lot more willingness to buy in to whatever the new guy presents, right? So right now, we still might be in that honeymoon phase where everybody's just saying like, wow, look at, this is exciting. We're doing defense and this is still fun. Look at this, you know, and the same thing applies with a new coach, where he walks in and he sees his guys, you know, busting their butts, and you know, that honeymoon phase goes both ways. So,
and then it goes away when they've lost 5 games in a row, maybe, and then you see how good the culture actually is.
Right, right. So as of right now, it's nice to hear that, you know, practices aren't running long because the guys aren't learning the sets or the principles on defense that they would like to hear, right? We aren't hearing any kind of story of anything less than just pure optimism from the on-court product. The off-court stuff, the ownership stuff, that stuff I don't think is going anywhere anytime soon. But as far as the product on the court, there's been nothing to make anybody feel anything less than purely optimistic. Now, all that said,
and by the way, you mentioned 50 Shades of Shade. I have one for you at the end of the show. So right. Anyone interested in the latest edition of that, again, shockingly recurrent segment, we have that coming for you at the end of the show.
Now, I was talking about optimism about on the court. I cannot be optimistic about the backup guys. There isn't really much to talk about because they're going to be so bad, and neither of them appear to have the tools to be even remotely decent defense.
So here, let's make this interesting then.
All right.
Name a point guard that you would not want to have, or that you would name a worse defensive point guard than either of the Lakers' two backup options.
Oh man.
This being Calderon and Huertas. And to be fair to both guys, they try. They just don't have the tools.
Yeah, that's how that plays out sometimes.
Yeah.
Worst defensive point guard than those two guys. Can we bring Mike Bibby out from the dead and put him on a basketball court again?
Mike Bibby at the end of his career might be there. That's
I would say I can't think of if I were to go through all the teams just really quickly in my head, there is no worse defensive situation out of the backcourt.
I got one, and you don't even have to get off of the Lakers roster.
Uh-huh.
The chair that guarded E.G. Onleon during his draft workout.
I don't know. I mean, what if E, like, you know, hit a wet spot and banged into the chair once accidentally?
Yeah, or like tripped over it just trying to do like a cross. I don't know. Yeah, or maybe that chair is not a true point guard.
That's also possible. It might be too tall to be like a long.
Yeah, it might. That chair might be a big. Actually, that would make more sense if it was guarding E.
I mean, you think of a chair, especially like right now, the dining room table in my dining room has the kind of bar stool chairs. So when I think of a big, tall, vertical chair, I just think of Roy Hibbert standing underneath the basket. Like, that's
yeah, that's fair. So the chair actually might just play a different position. So that's not really fair to ask the chair to defend the same players.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never All mind. Right. That was my bad. My apologies to East Chair.
So we'll move on then to the wings. And this would be Luol Deng and Brandon Ingram. And then whoever, you know, Nick Young might play some three. And we'll, you know, we
Anthony Brown.
We had some fun. Man, I keep forgetting he's on the team. Poor guy. But from the starting spot, Luol Deng is a good defender. You know, and he's old. Yes. He's old, and he's not.
He's not what he once was.
Right.
Thanks, Tom Thibodeau. But he's still okay. He's far better than anyone the Lakers were having play the three last year, mostly because the Lakers mostly had Kobe play the three. And I think Kobe tried on defense, like, I'm going to say 20 times all year.
I was going to say like half a percent of the time.
Okay. I don't want to get into math. So
no, 20 times. We'll say he tried 24 times. He matched his number in efforts on defense.
Kobe better.
So Luol Deng, in terms of the style of defense he's going to play, I kind of feel like while once upon a time he was locking people down, you know, and playing that style of defense, I think now on the Lakers at this stage of his career, he's going to play more of the D'Angelo Russell kind of style of defense compared to like if we were Russell and Clarkson, how we just had that conversation.
Yeah.
So I think he's
like make
going
it tough on them, but not necessarily be in their grill all game.
Right. Now, if Ingram steps up and shows himself to be, you know, worthy of more minutes from an earlier spot, then that means Deng can kind of play a little bit harder for the stretches that he's on the court, because you would think he's going to be on the court less to get Brandon Ingram as much time as Ingram can possibly get. But until that happens, it's just not worth it for the Lakers, for Deng to go out there and try to kill himself, trying to lock anybody down as if it's some kind of, you know, as if the Lakers really absolutely need these wins.
And yeah, and I think they have to be smart.
If I could really quickly, for those who are listening who are saying, like, of course the Lakers need wins. Yes, the point of these games are to win them, right? But I'm thinking long term for everybody on the roster. Deng signed a 4-year deal. We need to be able to get some value at the end of that contract. While it won't be great, the last year or so of that contract isn't going to be great. The value that on the court production isn't going to match what he's going to be getting paid. But you want to be able to get something. And if Deng goes out there and tries to win Defensive Player of the Year this year, or tries to lock anybody down consistently throughout the season, now you start worrying about what he might be able to do because he taxed himself or he overtaxed himself at the start of the contract. So that's all I'm saying. Of course the Lakers want to win, but it's just not that high a priority for where they are in terms of the stage of this rebuild. But
go ahead. And I also think that you make sense, even other than preserving him, it just doesn't do anyone any good. It doesn't necessarily help them chase wins for him to be going all out like a younger Luol Deng and just trying to be staying inside guys' jerseys, because he doesn't necessarily have the foot speed to do that anymore.
Right.
He needs to try and use his length and try and be a kind of a savvier defender rather than someone who's just going, you know, balls to the wall all the time.
I would say he probably winds up playing harder defensively in practice than he does in the games. because he's going to be in practice. He's going to be showing Ingram tricks and how to lock people down and what it takes to play that style of defense more consistently, based on his own words. Like, he didn't say exactly this, right? But he wants to mentor Ingram. He says he wants to help him out as much as he can. And in practice, that's the time to do it.
I don't know that I'd go that far, but I think that they'll be close as far as intensity when they do scrimmage. But you got to remember, these guys don't scrimmage a ton during the year.
No, I'm not saying in scrimmages. I'm saying, so you just said he doesn't have the foot speed to try to lock people down. And I'm saying, and I gave my reasons why it wouldn't make sense for him to lock people down defensively in NBA games, right?
Yeah.
Both because it's not smart, both because also because he just can't, right? Not the way he used to. In practice, though, he's going to be spending a lot of time with Ingram, who does have that foot speed, trying to teach him, hey, no, this is how, you know, this is the angle you take if you're playing this style of defense. This is how much space you don't want to allow. This is how you utilize your length, even while, you know, closing in on that on the space defensively that takes place while your guy has the ball. This is how you operate off the ball, right? This is how you're going to, you know, be up in passing lanes consistently. And that's the kind of stuff that I wouldn't say the practices are going to be more taxing than an NBA game. I would really hope that's not the case. But if
no, you would hope the opposite. You would hope that is the case because that means the Lakers are really good.
That's fair. But I would say from a mentorship standpoint, that's what I would want to hear from, you know, practices that, wow, Luol's out there just ripping Ingram to shreds whenever he possibly can to show Ingram this is how to do it. You know, that's what I would that's way more important to me than him trying to shut down Kawhi Leonard on some random Thursday night against San Antonio.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think on the other side of that, as far as what he can teach Ingram, I do think that I think we've mentioned this basically since Deng was signed, that he is kind of the perfect guy to come in and mentor Ingram just from skill set, from personality, all of that stuff. But I still don't think I don't think I'm going out on a limb here to say I don't anticipate Ingram being a plus defensively. Mm-mm. This year. I think at best he's negligible. He's not a harmful defender, but he's not necessarily good. He's like average. I think that's best case scenario.
What did Porzingis offer defensively? Was he better than league average?
Yeah, I'd say so.
I would say my goal for Ingram defensively, and obviously Porzingis being a rim protector offers more opportunity to impact the game defensively, but I don't know. I'd like to see some of the same stories regarding Ingram's defense that we started to see with Porzingis' defense.
As far as effectiveness?
Right. Like, wow.
Like, here's the rookie you'll never believe is making an impact on defense. That kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, those kind of narratives.
Yeah, I think that we could see that. And I think really that's his only hope to win the rookie of the year that he says that he wants to win is if all of a sudden, like, he has enough standout defensive performances against kind of big name stars or whatever that he plays well enough to get noticed or he has moments with those guys. And that's the only way that he can overcome not being the highest scoring rookie and win rookie of the year, I would imagine. Because generally that's just a what first year player scored the most points award.
Right. Or, yeah, I mean, if he stuffs a stat sheet, we can talk about what it would take there. But, like, if he averages,
that's a different discussion.
Yeah, if he averages, like, a block and a steal for the season, that'd be a pretty great defensive season for him.
You know? Gotta love those counting stats.
That's hey, man, I'm old school like that. All right, so backups, we already talked about Ingram. Anthony Brown, we know what he offers. The conversation regarding Anthony Brown isn't what he offers defensively. It's whether or not he'll ever make a shot in the NBA. And I do have my concerns about that. We'll talk about that on another show, though, because I watched him shoot today, and I wasn't thrilled with it. We'll move on to the interior, and it wasn't fair to judge Roy Hibbert with the constant, you know, just parade of offensive players who were making their way into the key and hoping that he would be able to clean up some of that stuff. So I don't necessarily think, you know, well, Mozgov might be better than Hibbert. Well, yeah, because Hibbert there was nobody who's going to be good in that situation, right? But I do think, statistically speaking, the hope would be that as the perimeter defense gets better, the interior defense gets better, and statistically speaking, we might see guys shoot lower percentages at the rim because it takes more to get there.
And with all of their focus on fundamentals defensively, the little things that they've been talking about after practices, rather than just this kind of idea of just like, let's try harder than the other team, there being a coherent defensive game plan this season, I think is going to would help any big, and I think will definitely aid Mozgov in clearing the very low bar of being better than Roy Hibbert defensively, which, again, apologies to Roy, he was completely set up to fail.
Right. Yeah. Just, I mean, when it comes
you could almost call him a fall guy in that situation.
I feel like there is a double meaning there. Well done. I would say
you appreciated the fun.
That was really good. That was one of the better ones. I would say when it comes to clearing the bar for you know what Roy Hibbert or any of the Lakers centers have offered over the last couple of years, right? Other than Dwight, they haven't really had a good defensive center.
Sacre? Excuse me.
Oh, my bad. Man, I was going to make – somebody made, like, who's going to be the 2017 MVP? And I almost tweeted out – or I started to tweet it out, Robert Sacre. I already missed those jokes. But the bar is set at, like, can you walk over the three-point line? Like, that's the bar isn't something that somebody can actually – it's elevated to where – even high enough to where somebody might be able to trip over it. It was that bad last year.
And again, if the Lakers want that to happen, D'Angelo Russell, you need to stop jumping on Mozgov. Just be careful. That's your big man right there. You got to protect him. That's a big investment. Just be careful.
I think I saw today that Brian Shaw shot free throws again.
Brian Shaw had to do push. I think Brian Shaw, conspiracy theory alert, I think he's making these absurdly low, like, he said today that he would do push-ups if they made 15 of 20 free throws. That should be a bad day. Like, Brian Shaw. Like, Brian Shaw, I think, just wants to show the kids how strong he is. He's like when your uncle comes over and he's like, hey, guys, watch me do push-ups. This is really cool. Like, when you're a kid. And so that's how he's trying to relate to the millennials.
Mm-hmm.
He's relating to them in, like, cool, what he thinks is cool uncle style. He's like, tomorrow I'm going to show them my freestyle rapping.
Well, oh, my gosh. There was the Seinfeld character who would purposely lose bets so he would take Elaine out on dates, right? So he would say, like, I bet you Tom Hanks didn't act as Forrest Gump. It was actually Alec Baldwin, right? And he would lose that bet on purpose so that Elaine would have to then take him out, or he would have to take Elaine out to lunch. That's what's going on there. Is it like, Brian Shaw's like, yeah, I bet you guys can make 1 out of 20 free throws.
Solid team building strategy, Brian Shaw. Anyway, the Lakers, we got way off track, but the Lakers bigs defensively. So we got to – do you think – again, this is such an easy question as to almost be stupid. But, can Mozgov be better than Hibbert? I think so, right?
So long as he's healthy.
Yeah. Can Tarik Black play instead of Ryan Kelly? And other Lakers Brandon Bass was okay as the backup center. I'll give him that.
I was kind of bummed when Bass didn't come back.
I don't know why the Lakers told him to go fish. That was kind of weird, but
that was way worse than your first pun. That was
can't bat a thousand.
I would say, if you look at the actual players that they have, I would say Mozgov is better suited to do, because he's more mobile too. Like, Hibbert's defense was great before with the verticality rule, you know, that he was great so long as he just had to stand there with his hands up in the air.
The Lakers brought him out to defend in space. It made no sense.
Right. And even if they were to ask Mozgov to do that, which I would hope they can't, or they don't, right? Because he's not very mobile.
But yeah, he's okay at that for his size, but, like, let's try and drop him back a little bit.
But he's more mobile than Roy Hibbert, but that's not saying very much. I would say because of what's expected of him, he's going to be, and just in general, the physical tools that he has compared to Roy Hibbert, he's an upgrade. Tarik Black is I would say at least the same, offers the same amount as Brandon Bass does defensively. I would say that's a wash. And then from there, third string, if you're looking at, like, if they have Larry Nance Jr. play backup center minutes, he's better than Ryan Kelly, right? Or Egonleon will at least be as bad as Ryan Kelly was defensively.
Yeah, is E better than the chair? I don't know. I guess we'll find out this year.
That'd be great if they got off to, like, a defensive slide off. Him in the chair, they're just standing there. And then some, like, random condensation gets on the ground and the chair actually moves accidentally and E's still standing there. God! You won again, chair!
This is going to be the gift that keeps on giving all year. The chair is going to make it into every Lockdown Laker somehow.
Today's show is brought to you by Lazy Boy. All right, so yeah, in terms of the interior, what those guys have to offer, we will see a noticeable upgrade there, right? And, and all of these things come together that make you think, yes, they can be better. And before we get to, like, the general how much better they can get, I did want to talk about, you know, what Luke has to offer. And I don't know if it's necessarily what Luke has to offer so much as what I'm looking for as the season goes on. Because last year, the frustration was the same stupid mistakes, you know.
All year.
Helping down on a post guy when you don't need to double the post, right? Something dumb like that. Or helping one pass away from a shooter in the corner. It's just really stupid mistakes that NBA caliber defenders shouldn't be making were happening all season. And that does come down to coaching to a large extent, right? Eventually you're like, guys, don't do that stuff, you know, instead of...
Yeah, I'd say first it's the player's fault. Then mm-hmm. if the players aren't adjusting, then either the coaches aren't telling them to adjust or the coaches aren't getting through. And so either way, that's kind of damning.
Right, and nobody looks good in that situation. So, what I would be hoping, or what I would hope to see from the Lakers this year is, yes, we know going into the season that the Lakers aren't going to be a great defensive team. They aren't even going to be a good defensive team. We're hoping for mildly horrible.
Well, we'll get into what we're hoping for in a second.
But as the season goes on, we hope that they get better. You know, if they're making stupid mistakes at the start of the year, that we aren't seeing those same stupid mistakes at the end of the year. That's all
they
I'm hoping for.
They try new things
from the coach.
Instead of throwing the players under the bus.
Exactly. So that's just, it's a minor note. And yes, I think I'm setting the standards lower than maybe I should, and it's almost unfair to the last coaching staff that I'm setting the bar so low for Luke and his coaching staff. But as of right now, all I'm hoping to watch is as the year goes along, I'm not frustrated watching the same dumb mistakes.
I mean, they kind of set the bar. They set that bar pretty low themselves.
That's fair.
So I think all that being said, I mean, it sounds like we're pretty optimistic, right? About that the Lakers will be better defensively. I think the real question is can they get out of the bottom five defensively? Because if you look at it, last year they were the worst, so mm-hmm. that undisputed worstness champion, and above them was the Brooklyn Nets, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the Phoenix Suns. Now, and then the Philadelphia 76ers right ahead of that. So the Sixers might even be a little. I don't know. Will they be better or worse defensively this year? I don't know.
I think they'll be worse because they still don't know what they're doing with the center stuff.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. But anyway, so can they be better than the Nets this year, the Lakers?
Yes.
I think there's a chance. Yeah, I think they could definitely be better than the Nets.
You saw all those funny memes about that Mets starting five that were going around on Twitter? Those
yes.
Were great.
That was not their starting five.
Oh,
that was definitely their best. What's funny is that you didn't know that, though.
Yeah, right. Like, that's what I was going to say.
You thought Bo no Beach idea. Was starting for the Nets.
It was that. Is that an actual person?
Yeah, that's a player for the Nets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, hey, a summer league guy fought his way onto the roster, so good for him. All right. Really, really nice guy. Yeah. So The New Orleans Pelicans, I would imagine they'll be better defensively than they were just by virtue of having Anthony Davis back and not having Ryan Anderson on the team. And so they'll probably be better. The Minnesota Timberwolves, kind of shocking they were this low last year. I think they're definitely due for a jump. The Phoenix Suns. Can the Lakers be better than the Suns?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, because I could see Chandler missing time, and if Chandler misses time, then that throws their entire defense. And like Alex Len isn't going to step in and beat Tyson Chandler.
Yeah, well, and then you got the Sixers. I don't know if the Lakers will be better than the Sixers. The Sixers' problem in the last couple of years has not been defense; it's been offense. I think the one way you look for issues there is if they actually start Ben Simmons at point guard. That's great and everything on offense, but that's not going to look so hot on defense, I wouldn't imagine.
Well, and again, that the whole center situation there, you know, if they have Nerlens Noel in there defensively, they're a better team defensively than they are when Jahlil Okafor is in there. And we have no idea what Joel Embiid offers on that side of the ball, but they have three centerpieces of their core who all happen to play the same position. And I don't know if that, you know, I don't think you could play those either. You know, maybe you could play Nerlens Noel and Embiid together, but you can't play like Okafor and Noel together. That doesn't work.
So are you saying the Lakers will be better than them defensively or worse?
I'd say better by the end of the season. I'd say
okay.
Better.
So right now we've got them up to what, fourth worst?
Because
they've cleared three teams now. They've cleared the Nets, the Suns, and the Sixers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So the Nuggets?
Nah, I don't think they'll be better than them.
I don't think so. Kings?
I could see them being better than the Kings. The Kings are a mess. The Kings are
a
hot mess.
Yeah, actually, yeah. The more that I always think of like the Kings, they'll be like better than the Lakers overall, but that'll be more because of offense than anything, I would imagine. Although, I think Jaeger comes in with pretty good defensive plaudits, right?
Oh, yeah. No, he definitely does, but I just...
But like their personnel is an issue. I mean, the fact that they're going to be starting like seven centers.
Well, if they're going to have Boogie and another center on the court, then that means whoever Boogie is guarding is going to be wide open in the corners basically whenever that person wants.
Yeah. I mean, and then now we're getting into the unreasonable to expect the Lakers to be better than them territory. The Bucks.
No, that's not happening.
Yeah. The Blazers.
Nah, probably not happening.
Yeah, so Rockets, Grizzlies, Knicks, Matt. I mean, we're getting into, like, actual teams
Rockets
now.
Is interesting.
Rockets is interesting because they might start Anderson and Harden.
Yeah.
But if the Rockets are below the Lakers defensively this year, then that means that something has went catastrophically wrong.
I'd keep an eye on the Rockets.
Okay.
I'd keep an eye on the Rockets.
At this point, though, I mean, we're getting into teams like it's unreasonable to expect the Lakers to be better than them. So I guess the conclusion we're coming to is possibly they can get. No, I don't. I still don't think we didn't pass five. So I think we got them to at best 26th.
I think I get them out of the bottom five. Let's make a bet on it. We'll make a Twitter fine bet on this.
I don't know if I can do these bets anymore,
It'll
man.
It'll be at the end of the year.
You'll forget. So
I'm writing
we'll
it down,
just and you got to stop making bets on Twitter too. We'll talk about that later. But I think, So I don't think that they'll be out of the bottom five. But I guess we'll agree to disagree on that.
Okay.
And so I guess it would be fair to say it would be a challenge for them to get in out of the bottom five, which kind of seamlessly segues us into our 50 Shades of Shade that we were going to have to end the show.
Yep.
Because of the quote that we have to end it. So are you ready for some 50 Shades of Shade? You're ready to grade some shade?
Bart Scott voice can't wait.
Okay, that was actually not bad. We need to work your impressions in more. That was not bad. So... Trevor Lane of Lakers Nation went to Media Day a couple days ago, and he wrote his piece. I believe it came out. It either came out today. Well, you guys will be listening to this on Thursday, so it came out Wednesday, I think, or at least I read it on Wednesday. And it was a good piece. You should go check it out. But he had a quote from Tarik Black in there and like a little anecdote. So So here we go. I'm just going to read from his story. Before we said our goodbyes, I decided to press him being Tarik Black, one last time and asked if he still would have returned to the Lakers if Byron Scott was the coach. Oh. True to form, Black firmly replied, quote, "I don't run from challenges, man," end quote.
All right, well, that's the answer you would hope you would get, right? It's better than him saying, like, nah, probably not, you know?
I don't run from challenges, though.
Yeah, no.
Re-signing.
He's certainly calling the last guy a challenge.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to count you reading as you talking about the last guy, because you named him by name.
I was going to say, I realized that afterwards, and I was going to pray that you showed me some mercy.
Although, we'll offer this to the fans as like a poll.
No, come on. I was reading from the passage.
Well,
I wouldn't.
The only reason I'm saying this is because I want Darius to retweet whatever I make you tweet.
That does not count. I was reading from a passage. I gave you pass on that awful song title yesterday. So where would you grade this shade for our favorite, again, segment that apparently we just can't get away from, despite the fact that each night we sign off with saying that this will probably be the last one for a while?
All right. So I would calling him a challenge sets it, I'd say, between 35 and 40. Nah, I'd say like a 35. I'd say
nah, man,
35.
I'm sorry. We totally disagree on this one. I'm going 50 again.
50 again?
Yes.
All right, you have to sell me on this. I don't see how this is a 50.
He called the last coaching staff. Your coaching staff is supposed to make things easier on you. He called re-signing with them a challenge. He said that it would a challenge would imply that it would actively make his life more difficult. He would rather than run away from a challenge and go sign in a place where, by definition of that phrasing, it would be easier for him to succeed, he would come back and take on the challenge of playing there.
That's tough. All right, I'll raise mine to like a 40, but I don't know. I compared to the other ones we've gotten, I don't see it as high.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right, but I don't know. Maybe I'm overreacting. We'll see what people tweet at us tomorrow, what they think.
Let us know what you think. Give that a score, 1 out of 50 on hashtag 50 Shades of Shade. And I don't know if you noticed this on Twitter, and I gave the hashtag a shout-out, but I've seen the Twitter float around there a couple times when we see some of these quotes. So that makes me particularly
happy. Make sure to let us know. If you guys see some shade, let us know. We appreciate the heads up.
Yeah, at Locked On Lakers.
It's very hot in Los Angeles right now. We definitely need the shade.
All the shade we can get. Absolutely. All right, so that does it for this show about the defense. It works because defensive practices tend to be pretty dry. This podcast might have been a little bit on the dry side, but I promise you, tomorrow's show, we are going to have quite the treat for everybody. We're looking forward to the guests that we're going to have on the show for that.
We're not going to say the guest name just in case things go wrong again.
Yep, absolutely. Although
we are
recording using my computer though, so that's a positive.
So hey, let's not count our chickens before they hatch. We got a good guest, and we hope to have that for you on Friday if Anthony's computer works. Although I feel like him talking it up so much is jinxing it. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Probably not the smartest thing to do. So
if we don't get a special guest, I promise we'll just have Anthony do the Mitch voice, and I'll just interview him, and we'll pretend it was Mitch Kupchak, and then put like an asterisk at the end, and then I think that's like journalistically okay.
Important note: we aren't actually Mitch isn't the guest. So before people,
yeah, Mitch
minds,
isn't the guest.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's not Mitch.
I think as long as even if you impersonate Mitch the whole show, I think as long as you say like LMAO who did this at the end, mm-hmm, I think it's not like plagiarizing his voice or unethical or whatever.
Could
so
you just imagine Mitch saying LMAO. LMAO, who did this? Y'all are savages.
I really should stop. You're making me laugh so hard that I'm doubling over and moving away from the mic to laugh, which isn't great audio content, but you gotta stop, man.
All right. Y'all gotta stop.
Okay, so Mitch, where can our fans find us and leave us a review on iTunes?
Well, you know, you can find the show on Audio Boom, iTunes,
Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Today's Fast Break is a great blog. It's been around for a few years. Great analysis that's going on over there. Make sure you're using the promo code LO Lakers.
Hold on. Hold on. Now, Mitch, I know as the general manager of the Los Angeles Lakers, you don't need tickets to go to games. But for our fans, we want to let them know about SeatGeek and the promo code LO Lakers, and they can use that to get a $20 rebate on their first ticketing purchase. And does that sound like a good deal to you?
It sounds like a great deal. If I haven't had to buy a ticket in probably 37.
Hold on, be careful now.
37,000 years.
Oh,
but
dude. All right, I'm cutting you off. So that was the show. If you liked the Mitch voice, then please leave us a review on iTunes. If you didn't like it, then just ignore that last part and leave us a review on iTunes anyway. And we appreciate all the support from our listeners, and we will hopefully have a special guest and talk to you guys tomorrow.
All right. Have a good one, everybody. Shouts to Rick Fox.